Trigger warning. This episode has explicit content. We discuss sensitive and explicit topics, including sexual abuse. It is definitely not safe for kids and can be triggering for some listeners. Please listen with discretion.
Oh, God. Oh, yeah, right there. Oh. 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 Oh, God. Oh, yes. 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 Oh. Oh, yes. 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 Oh. Yes. 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 Oh. 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 Oh, God.
I'll have what she's having.
What do you feel when you hear that sound of an orgasm? Does it make you squirm with embarrassment? Are you tempted to turn off the episode really quickly and switch to another show? Or are you kind of turned on? Or most likely, you're probably wondering what the heck is going on and has Allison lost her damn mind? It's a fair question. We're taught to never talk about sex, money, religion, politics, and so much more in polite company. But I beg to differ. I feel like because we don't talk about the subjects that truly make up who we are, we now stand in a divided world, feeling a little too exposed and a lot judged. And does anyone really know the truth about each other? We keep so much of ourselves under wraps and try and fall in line with social norms. And this is a chance to pull back the covers and maybe get to know each other a little better. Welcome to the Sex Series on the new and improved Culture Changers podcast. I'm Allison Hare and welcome to episode 100. 100! It's been quite a road, but I'm so proud to make it this far. And so much of that is because of you, because you kept listening, because you kept sharing with your friends, your feedback about what you love or what you don't love, and sharing these episodes. That is the ultimate mark of success for me. When you share it, I know I've done something right, that I've hit a nerve. And that is a conversation that needs to be continued. And you've also reached out to my guests and shared what moved you, and you continue supporting them. I hope you'll continue to tell your friends and keep listening. It temporarily fills my empty heart, and I appreciate the validation. And until that wears off, I need to keep publishing. You get me, right? I'm working on it. I'll have a specialist on here in no time to help us all with the validation part, okay? All right, so here is what we're going to do. Culture Changers is going to have meaningful discussions about the biggest topics of our time. And you know, I can't really keep things in the shallow end. We've got to go deeper. We're exploring topics like sex, aging, beauty, race, money, fame, fun. Yes, I said fun. It's like a whole thing. Religion, politics, and so much more. But we're not just scratching the surface. We're digging into the psychology of how can we do better and be better. So welcome to the Sex Series. I get to bring conversations to you about ethical non-monogamy and sex after sexual assault, which is what this episode is about, and kink, and oh my God, kink, BDSM, it is something I know nothing about, but I'm so interested to learn more about why. And today, I am super honored to welcome Felicia Julian, a sex-positive advocate and founder of Condom Couture in Atlanta. We are talking about sex after sexual trauma. Now, you probably know that statistics show that 1 in 4 women have been sexually assaulted or raped. And I was surprised to see that 1 in 6 men have also been sexually assaulted. 1 in 6. Y'all, that's just reported. So we know that the numbers are likely much higher than this. So when your trust, your safety, your self-worth are completely obliterated in an instant when somebody traumatizes you, how do you go on to heal and have a healthy sex life or a healthy life anyway. That's what we're discussing today. And we'll talk about ethical non-monogamy, and we talk a lot about porn and so many other topics I was not expecting we would cover. But all of these topics are things that need to come out into the open and us to have a better understanding about. So I'm so excited to share our chat. But I have one quick note though. Are you listening to this on Apple Podcasts? Apple made a change where you don't subscribe anymore, you follow. So if you're listening on Apple, can you go to this episode, click on the dropdown where it says go to show. When you get there, click on the plus button in the top right corner and voila, you'll get these important conversations delivered right to you every time I publish. Lastly, I'm sharing updates about my journey on my blog. Make sure you subscribe to get my emails. They are usually dropping bombs that will make you laugh or maybe cry. But most of all, you'll never feel alone. Go to allisonhair.com and let's stay in touch. Here's my chat with sex positive advocate, Felicia Julian. Tell me about what is the definition of sex positive?
So to me, sex positivity is being able to encompass everything that you desire, want, and require sexually, but without shame, right? I think that the not being ashamed section of this is the most important. To be positive about what your needs are and not judge others for theirs, but be open to listening and knowing your boundaries. Like, yes, that's for me, or no, that isn't, and that's okay. Finding that balance of not judging yourself or anyone else, as well as going for what you desire sexually without holding back, you know, like being able to talk about whatever it is, how kinky it is or how weird it is or how boring it is. Like, it's fine. It's yours, you know?
How much do you think culture plays into sex positivity? Do you feel like this is a movement that is changing towards it, or do you think we have a long, long way to go?
Oof. So I do think that we are moving towards it. However, there are some hiccups that, you know, you see along the way. I think that we're learning. I see this progress of, oh my gosh, I'm losing the name of it now. Fans only.
Only fans.
So I actually have friends who worked on OnlyFans, and that was their main source of income. And then we saw this big movement towards women specifically, or female identifying individuals, being able to express themselves sexually on this platform and feel free and feel good about their bodies on it while making profit. And it became this industry that was booming. And then all of a sudden, you know, recently, actually, they stopped allowing nudity on the platform.
But didn't they pull that back? So OnlyFans is a social platform, right? A social mm-hmm. platform that it has become, just like you said, for people that wanted to express themselves or show nudity mm-hmm. on there and be able to make money from that. And I wonder how much of it is, you know, like if I'm not involved in that world, am I thinking about OnlyFans as just a porn site for horny dudes, or is it a place for women to truly express themselves mm-hmm. and be free with it without, you know, like the money factor being the only reason they're doing it?
So I think there's a few interesting points that you brought up. Saying platform for horny dudes is really interesting to me because I think that porn is for everyone. And I do think that, yes, it's defined by this audience that everyone targets, right? Mm. But I also don't think that there's a problem with being sexual or being, or saying, you know, like, yeah, I am a horny dude, you know, mm-hmm. I can identify with being a horny dude. But saying that, you know, like the woman on the other side of the camera, in front of the camera, rather, she is being sexually liberated in her own way, mm-hmm. right? And I think that it's okay that the male gaze is there as long as it's consensual. Mm-hmm. And if there's any side to, you know, other people involved with the person watching the video. I think that that needs to be a discussion. So I think that there's this weird, like, gray area where we always identify ourselves with that individual who's watching, or being a part of their life romantically, like, oh, I wouldn't want to be with that person because they watch porn. You know, like, it's okay that they watch porn. I think that we shouldn't bash it. I think that it still is a way for women to liberate themselves regardless of what's on the other side.
That's such an interesting perspective, because there is the opposition saying that porn is ruining sex lives because it's showing, you know, it's showing fantasy that is not really sustainable for average everyday women or average everyday guys. And so I wonder how, you know, I hear about ethical porn, mm-hmm. which I don't know what that means, but I'm assuming it is something about the consensual things. But I'd love to get your thoughts on the reality of porn being something that's healthy for people, or is there a boundary where it's just not?
Yeah, I love that you brought this up. Okay, so being with Condom Couture and working with Planned Parenthood and thinking about...
Can you explain what Condom Couture is?
Oh, yes. So Condom Couture is my founded nonprofit benefit for Planned Parenthood. It's a... Condom Couture ATL is mine. Condom Couture has existed itself for, I think, over 12 years now. But for the past three, I ran it in Atlanta. And... I've handed off this year, but it is a nonprofit fundraising event, meaning we don't benefit, we don't take any of the profits ourselves. It's a group of volunteers, and we usually fill a stage with transgendered individuals, drag queens. We love our drag performers. we'll have fire throwers. We'll have whomever wants to help us out and volunteer. And it's an event, and we raise money for Planned Parenthood. So our first year, we raised $21,000.
Wow.
And then during the pandemic, we had to go virtual, and we threw together this platform and just, like, had these amazing videographers come in and film it. And we still raised over $10,000 during a pandemic for Planned Parenthood, which was awesome. So we're all about sex positivity, being able to unashamedly be yourself, explore, perform if you want to. And also, we give out vibrators, we give out lube, and we give out condoms. And it's all about condoms. It's a condom fashion show, hence the couture part. So there are runway items, and everything's made out of condoms. And there's...
Oh my God, yeah. That sounds so fun.
Yeah, it's so much
sounds
fun.
Sounds creative.
It's so much fun. You can go home with one. You can... We typically do an auction. I'm not sure how they're going to be doing it now that I've handed it over. But I'm still all in on, like, pushing it forward. So with that being said, thinking about safe sex and thinking about ethical porn, I'm all for this idea behind what ethical porn is, which is saying, like, yeah, it's about consent, right? And usually there's a part where the male identifying individual, or the person with a penis,
the penis owner,
yeah, right. Gets a condom or asks if it's okay to get a condom, if they're going to go for, you know, not if it's okay to get a condom, but is it okay that we go further and I get a condom? And usually there's consent, and then they move through sex, and it's very much about... It could be about the connection. It could be kinky. It could be, you know, whatever that is for those two individuals at the time. But it's not, you know, it's typically not overboard. It's not
denigrating women.
Produced. Yeah. Right. Yes. Exactly. And I'm glad you brought that up.
Is it a turn on to see, you know, like, people being safe?
For me, it is.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, because I think that is the disconnect. Like, oh, well, he just grabs her, or she just grabs him, and then they go for it. And it's, you know, in the rainforest, and there's people watching, or whatever it is. And it's like, how often are we going to be in the rainforest?
Like, babysitter and, like, porn.
Yeah. It's like so interesting. Like, these fantasies. And I do think, you know, babysitter porn, like I think that that's hard for me to talk about. I think that that kind of triggers an age difference, which doesn't make anyone okay at the end. I think that women already have this struggle to constantly look and appear younger. And then I think that, you know, mansplaining is here, and it not only is it a control factor, but it's also this, yeah, I mean, we don't have to dive into that, but there, the ethics behind that is also just really pushes the line.
There's so much going on right now, I think, from kind of dismantling the patriarchy in a lot of ways. I think that the Me Too movement, whether you have a critiques over it's gone too far or all of those things, it has been embedded in our culture for so many centuries. Mm-hmm. That is being dismantled now. And so I'm really curious to see how it unfolds. Is it where it is truly consensual? Because I think about, you know, when you talk about the age difference or babysitter porn or doing things against people's will, you know, like there are certain things, you know, I was attacked. I was assaulted when I was a teenager, and I was pinned down, and, you know, like anything where I see somebody being restrained, mm-hmm. Is really hard for me to watch. And I imagine because so many women, you know, have suffered from some type of sexual assault, to see that again and again and have it normalized, mm-hmm. whether it's through porn, whether it's through, you know, the normalcy of that. I'm really curious to see how culture plays into something that's more respectful. And from the Me Too movement, how has that played into it? Do you think it is, are we on a better path?
I think that we have a lot of work to do there, for sure. Because there is this push and pull of liberation versus what's too much to show. And what does cross the line for those who have experienced trauma in different ways sexually? I myself have experienced sexual trauma too. And, you know, I see things online that sometimes do remind me of it. And I have become numb to it. I just skip over it, right? Mm. But that's also a side of it that isn't okay. To expect the person who has endured trauma to have to deal with it on their own, right? Of course, we all have therapy and we all have our means of going about, but I think that there's just a lot of work past the Me Too movement to discuss consent. And I do think that ethical porn is on the way of doing that. And thinking about, you know, restraints and things like that, I think that to some degree it can be okay as long as there's some sort of labeling on it first. Maybe they have to go to a specific site to see it or a specific area of the site to see it. Like kind of like a warning label almost. Like at the beginning of podcasts, typically there's, you know, like this podcast
might be triggering, right?
Yes, exactly. So I think that something like that should be in play, and there should also be a level of consent within it. You know, like the person who is being restrained should ask for it first, so that they are still in control of what the other person's doing to their body. Because I think that that tends to be the biggest disconnect. I know, like in life in general, autonomy is super important to me, and as most as most vagina owners would agree, or female born individuals or assigned individuals would agree, having autonomy over our bodies is extremely important. And in pornography, being able to see that the person who is in that situation has control of themselves, always has a trigger word, always, or not trigger word, a safe word, and can always get out of the situation and gave consent every step of the way.
So you said something about when you see things, they can be triggering where you disconnect. And so I think when it comes to people who have been sexually assaulted, and I think that we know one out of four, might even be more than that, women have been traumatized, sexually assaulted in their lifetimes, which is a fuckload, right? I mean, it's a lot. So if that's the case, how do you reconnect to your body when the instinct is to disconnect and disengage, when you might be triggered? It might be something where you go overboard, where that is, you know, like your safety is to be very sexual, and some is to fully pull back. I'd be curious about how you re-engage, or how you truly engage or reconnect with your body in a way that gives you autonomy, that gives you pleasure, that gives you your body back.
Yeah, for sure. I was raped when I was 18, and it was from a close friend. And that really held me back for a while. And I was even in a relationship at the time. And my boyfriend at the time really took me in and understood. And we took a break from any sexual activity. In all honesty, I'm just going to be totally transparent here. I went on a sex spree after that. I slept around a lot. I had my, they call them hot girl summers now, if in a positive way, but like it was not from a positive point at that time of my life. And I was just, I went crazy. And then I had another traumatizing relationship. The guy I was with would abuse me sexually and mentally and emotionally. And I found out later that I actually got herpes from him, and it made me step back from sex totally. I thought, I actually said the words, "I'm damaged goods." And I remember feeling like damaged goods. And even thinking about that now, like, I could break that down in so many ways now and think, like, goods? Like, what? I'm not here to provide a service for anyone else. I'm here to be full on my own and have that autonomy and make myself happy in whatever way that is. And sexually, I do want that. And it took me, I think, a couple years after that before I started to have sex again. But that slow path was me touching myself and me learning, like, okay, I can make myself feel good in these moments, and I can make love to myself, and I can, like, I honestly sometimes would even set up a mirror and I would set the mood and it would just be me and just exploring my body in this way, because at the time I thought no one would. But through doing that, I learned that, I love myself and someone will love me. And, my partner now, I told him about having herpes on our first day, and he seriously looked at me and he was just like, okay, so he's like, isn't that just a stigma? And I was like, okay, cool. You get it. Like, thank you. And I've never looked back and thought those things again, but through exploring my body and learning, like, okay, I like these breasts. Oh, this feels good. I like this. I like when I'm touched here. And now I can say to my partner, like, I want you to touch me right here in this, 1-inch spot. This is my area. Yeah. I want you to touch me right now. Because I know that about myself. And it took trauma to some degree, but it doesn't have to. And getting out of that trauma really took exploring myself.
That is so brave too. And I wonder about your desire to get back your body and take the time to do that instead of numbing out in other ways that is, typical of how do you process trauma? How do you process really bad things,
The numbing out thing, during those years when I was just going crazy sexually and just, going out to clubs and bringing dudes home, bringing women home, bringing whomever home, I was numbing out during that time. My friend made a joke. He was like, I bet you don't even know how many partners you've had. And I was like, oh, that's ouch, you're right. And that's okay.
Does it matter? Does the number matter, really?
It doesn't. And that's what I was going to say. Like, it's okay if I don't know. And I don't fault anyone for having however many partners they've had. But in that moment, I realized I'm numbing out. I don't even know who I've had sex with. Like, mm-hmm. Sometimes I don't even know their name before or after. And
is there an element of excitement with that?
Yes.
In a rush?
Yeah, for sure. I think for me personally, it was numbing. But I think that for any other individual, if they enjoy that and there's like a rush with it and it's exciting, yeah, go for it. You know, like have that hot girl summer. I am all about it. Personally, I don't do that anymore. But I have so many friends who are in the industry or who, you know, do that all the time, or who are poly and they have their partners, or who are in open relationships. And as long as it's consensual and as long as it's open and there's communication between both sides or all sides involved, I don't see any problem with it, because it is exciting. Mm-hmm. You know, get out there, explore yourself, let someone else explore you.
Do you feel like polyamory or ethical non-monogamy, or even you know, like exploring different partners, whether different genders, different partners, do you feel like that should be more normalized?
I do. Yeah. I'm monogamous. My partner and I actually had this very discussion a couple of nights ago, and we were like, you know, if you were to ever want to bring someone else in, just let me know. We can discuss it. But I know I don't want that now. And I said that, and he said, I don't want that either. But yeah, if we wanted to bring someone in, sure, like we would discuss it. We would make sure that everyone was okay. We would make sure that we all came together and sat down and like knew each other, and that we could have, for us personally, it would be a three-person relationship. Mm-hmm. To us, that would make the most sense. But, you know, we're fine being monogamous and we're happy together. We think that we can't handle any more drama in our lives. But I also have friends who, one of my dearest friends is in a poly marriage, and his wife has had her partner for, I think, 4 years now. And he's had his other partner for, I think, 2.5 years now. And sometimes they even have extra partners too, who come in and they introduce to the whole family. And
that's so wild to me.
Yeah. And I know it's not for me, but I see it and it's beautiful. Mm-hmm. Like seeing the love in the room between these four people who are, you know, two of them are married and the other two come in and it's family. They have an extra bedroom. They can split up and everyone can come together and eat dinner together. And it really is like this thing that should be normal. Like we're not naturally monogamous creatures. We've kind of learned that through the years. There's nothing wrong with being monogamous or being non-monogamous, but over the years that we've developed this sense of monogamy, mm-hmm. We've kind of lost we've gained judgment towards those who didn't follow suit. And I think that that's kind of where we fall short in bringing it into this normalized
world. So I've got a question for you. I've got to ask you this. My husband and I talk about this all the time. So we know this couple that are practice ethical non-monogamy. Mm-hmm. And so they have a son together. He has a girlfriend. She, the wife, also has a girlfriend. Mm-hmm. And they all come together. And, you know, like they're to me, it seems like it is born out of love and inclusion. It does not seem like any deviant behavior, and they're very open about it. And it just seems beautiful. And so my husband and I will talk about it and we're like, I don't know how they do it, you know, like, but I wonder, do you feel like there might be a sliding scale of people that would feel more comfortable in monogamy versus otherwise? So, you know, like my husband and I have never cheated on anyone in our lives. We've both been cheated on before each other, mm-hmm. you know, but our monogamy feels good to us, you know, but I have zero judgments about other people doing that. We're trying to figure out like how does this even work? You know, like, how does somebody not get jealous when, you know, they want to hang out tonight, but they're going to be out with their girlfriend, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how that all works out. Do you feel like there is a sliding scale towards monogamy and people that just aren't?
I don't know if I would say sliding scale, but I mean, maybe. I know, like, I think so. Because, like, thinking about my partner and I and our conversation and thinking we are both very monogamous people. He wasn't always a very monogamous person.
We all have our moments.
Yeah. I mean, well, he's never cheated, but he's only really been in mainly open relationships. He was in a 4-year open relationship before me. And, but again, like, before we even got together, we're like, okay, he asked if we would be in an open relationship. And I said, that's not for me, but if that's what you want, I'm just not the person
sure
for you. And he was like, no, actually, that sounds nice, like, let's do that. And so the conversation comes up pretty frequently on my behalf, because I am the same way as you, you know, like, I think that I would get jealous or cause jealousy, and that's just something that I don't want. But we've also discussed, you know, this sense of ownership of your own life and ownership of your own emotions. And I think that people who can practice ethical polyamory, I think that they just have this like strong sense of their own emotions, and they are able to maneuver them way better than I can.
Yeah. My husband's like, it just sounds expensive and exhausting. Yeah, like, how do you keep track of?
I know. Yeah. My partner now is like, oh, yeah, I don't know how I even did that before. Like, he was in an open thing, so he didn't have other partners. Mm-hmm. Right. But having other partners, he's just like, no, like, emotionally, that sounds so exhausting. Like, it does, doesn't it? For me, it just sounds like jealousy, you know, and a lot of drama.
I don't know how, like, I would not be cool.
Yeah, I wouldn't either, which is why it's so important for open conversation, right? And I think that, and like being consensual, because I think that if he were to come to me and want that, I would discuss it with him, and then we would decide together if it's something to do or not to do, or if we should split because it's something he needs but not what I need. Mm-hmm. And I think that that tends to be something that's shocking to a lot of people, like, that we would feel okay discussing it.
But it seems so easy to say, well, I'm just not the person for you.
Yeah.
But you might love this person.
Yeah,
you might really love this companionship, and you might love the relationship and the fun you have. So it's hard because I feel like people are easy to say, well, if he cheats, I'm gone. You know, like, even in a you know, regular marriage, that's it. And I think it's so much more complicated, or complex, I should say, than to just write it off and be so black and white.
Yeah.
You know, I just don't know how, from a culture perspective, how is it okay? How is it more acceptable? How do you bring this into the open? What do you think would help normalize?
Normalize polyamory,
all of these, or, you know, like, I think it is personal choice. I think it's personal autonomy, personal choice, feeling okay, you know, that you might be a very sexual person or an asexual person.
Yeah.
And is that okay?
Yeah. You know? Yeah, for sure. I think that I honestly think that, and before the show, we were discussing this a little bit, we're not really taught how to communicate in a healthy manner when we're young. I think culturally there's this divide, you know. I was born in Canada, and we kiss each other on the lips in Canada. Like, you kiss your friends on the lips, you kiss your aunt on the lips, like, and here you hardly even hug people. So it's very different in certain physical ways here. And even thinking about little things like that, you know, like the communication and the physical touch that we deprive ourselves of in this culture, I think that that needs to change too, because I think that it all comes down to the foundation of healthy communication and how to deliver ideas and how to accept another person's ideas and how to also discuss, like, that you can change your mind and that's okay, regardless of I'm changing my mind about this monogamous relationship. Now I want an open one, or now I don't want to be with you. And that's okay for someone to decide. Mm. And I think that that actually creates a more stable relationship rather than he better not cheat on me, or she better not cheat on me, or they better not cheat on me, you know, or I'm gone. Like, well, people change and mistakes happen, sure. Or maybe that person just changed and maybe that's just not the person for you. And that's okay if you want to leave, and it's okay if you want to stay and work on it. And there's just, yeah, it's erasing that judgment around it and finding a good source of communication and balance of what is healthy for you and having that autonomy over your own life. You know, if I were to do something bad in my relationship, or not bad, but like that my partner frowned upon in my relationship, and it was totally because I needed it, or, you know, well, I don't know if I should say the word need, but really wanted it in that moment. Mm-hmm. And I came to him and he was like, I'm not down for that. Be like, okay, I'm sorry. Like, let's work on how we can, let's shop some ideas, you know, like how can we fulfill the parts of me that desired this other human or this other thing? And like, what is it that I'm missing here?
That's really powerful to say, I need anything.
Yeah.
That's really powerful. I don't think we are, I don't think as females, vagina owning, female identifying, I don't know what the correct thing is. I have been playing around with the idea of the art of receiving, you know, the law of reception, and that women find it so hard to receive and have it be okay to tell people what you want because you need it or deserve it or like it.
Yeah.
And that is, that's a powerful box of worms.
Oh, girl. It is. Yeah, I've been working on this with my therapist a lot this year. And I will say, like, being able to look at someone and say no is really hard for me. Not so much sexually anymore, because I've been through that in the past, but just in general as a woman. But I think that it does go into that too, right? Like, how do I accept and how do I set my boundaries, like, simultaneously?
Mm-hmm.
And how do I know that I am worthy of feeling good? And how do I know I'm worthy of this pleasure that I want, or this happiness that I desire and need in my life? Like, what do I need to make me happy? I do believe that it's all within us, and I do believe that we can explore that sexually within ourselves as well, but we can still desire other things, and that can still build upon how we feel and how we feel that pleasurable side of ourselves, right? And I do think, yeah, I think that I've just been working on it so much that these words are happening. But yeah, being able to say, like, obviously, there's something that I need right now and I'm not getting it. So we literally have a whiteboard in our house. Like, and sometimes I use it and I'm like, here's my ideas. Here are my feelings around it. And
I like that you call them ideas.
Yeah.
Like suggestions. Here's what I'm playing around with.
Yeah. I think that when there's one other person, is all I can really speak for, but any set of individuals in your life that you are with, there has to be some sort of like negotiation that's constantly happening, because no two people have the exact same wants, you know, and we play this game with everyone in our lives, friends, family, everyone. But when it comes to our partners, it's this different sense of connection, and we have to be able to communicate this. And if my wants channel back to these little idiosyncratic tiny things, you know, like, I want you to wipe the counter every day, you know, or I want you to fuck me on the counter, you know, like whatever it is. Like, if I know, oh, something in the kitchen needs to happen, like, I can write that down and then brainstorm, you know. And it sounds so strange, but there's just like this, it is an idea for me, because it's like, okay, I know that I need something. What is it? And how can I find that in a healthy way? maybe it's because I've had trauma and I've had to work through it in that way. But to me, that helps me kind of like create this flow chart of desire, I guess.
But it sounds like, if I'm hearing this right, it sounds like self-worth is equivalent to boundaries. And, you know, the other aspect of it is to make sure that you feel psychologically safe with a partner. And that part goes back to self-worth too. It's hard, you know, it's hard to make sure you've got all three of those things. And I think it's an evolution, you know, from a self-worth perspective, for the idea of reception, of being able to receive and feeling worthy of receiving.
Yeah, I think so. It's like the trifecta or
something. It's the trifecta.
Yeah. I like this.
I think this is a perfect way to close our conversation. Yeah. Oh my God, Felicia, I've loved talking to you. This was so fascinating.
Great. Yes, thank you so much, Allison.
Thank you for letting my little brain go.
Yeah, no, thank you so much, because you just opened my eyes to things I didn't realize were in my head. So thank you.
Oh my goodness. Felicia, you are brave, you're courageous, you're a great dancer with great hair, and I'm just so honored that you'd be willing to share your story with me. If you're listening and maybe you heard yourself in these stories, or you could feel your mind open with compassion as we all heal from our broken parts, I would encourage you to reach out to Felicia Julian. I'll link her info in the show notes. And if you have suffered from sexual trauma and need to speak to someone, please call the National Sexual Trauma Hotline at 1-800-656-4673. And you, thank you for getting me to 100 episodes. Won't you follow me on the socials and tell me a topic that is important to you, or if this topic resonated with you? Maybe we can solve some of these problems together on future episodes. I want to be here with you and for you. And if you haven't done it yet, go subscribe to my blog at allisonhair.com. Thanks for listening. Thanks for keeping it 100, and I'll see you next time.